This is Pure Decking, show number 490 for August the 4th, 2007. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and really complaining about dental work. I'm Morps. I'm going to be drinking heavily due to the aforementioned dental work. We have a madman. What's up, madman?
Not much. I don't have dental work, but I do promote drinking heavily. My liver loves me for it.
The liver is evil and must be punished. And we have an RU.
Making a small prediction on the first one of this group to die from consumption.
Are we going with the classic definition of consumption, or we got a new definition of it? Because
if you want to come up with a new one, dude, it's all a flavor of the fucking month right now, is changing definitions of everything.
Okay.
I'll go with the old traditional way.
Because they've got medication for that now. A little pill. Unless you live in Africa, you don't have to worry about it.
Uh-huh.
Or, you know, an intense, you know, it's like, I don't need to go to the doctor. I'm stronger than that. What happened to him? He died.
He's been hacking up shit for 4 months. We've
really?
Been telling him to go to a doctor.
At this point, you still trust the medical association?
No. Really? No.
The association?
Not,
just... No. I've got some individuals within it.
I trust doctors, not medical associations. I've talked to doctors, and wanting to chop your wee-wee off isn't normal and not medical care.
Hey, dude, that's gender-affirming. Affirming. Affirming is a good word. Remember? It's not mutilation of children. It's affirming.
I don't trust medical associations, just certain medical providers.
I don't
think
I have
that one in the ring.
I used to have the whole skit of that guy. I guess that's the only one I have on the soundboard now.
Oh, the old dude.
Yeah, it's like, I caught my dong in the sinkhole.
Yeah.
As he said.
All right, let's do some news.
All right, well, this first one up, RU sent to me, so he has a head start. Visa, quote, intended to help, unquote, Pornhub and its parent company monetize child porn. Judge finds in allowing case to move forward. And this is just sick. In a setback for Visa in a case alleging the payment processor is liable for the distribution of child pornography on Pornhub and other sites operated by the parent company MindGeek, a federal judge ruled that it was reasonable to conclude that Visa knowingly facilitated the criminal activity. On Friday, July the 29th, U.S. District Judge Cormac Carney of the U.S. District on the Central District of California issued a decision in the Felitites versus MindGeek case, denying Visa's motion to dismiss the claim. It violated California's unfair competition law, which prohibits unlawful, unfair, or fraudulent business acts and practices by processing payments for child porn. And they do have a copy of the disposition, the link there. In the ruling, Carney held that the plaintiff, quote, adequately alleged, unquote, that Visa engaged in a criminal conspiracy with MindGeek to monetize child pornography. So what this actually is the judge saying that there's enough of a case here that it's worth taking to court. What they're not doing is saying that Visa knowing, you know, they're not saying guilty. They're saying there's a case here. It's worth looking into.
There's something there.
Right.
We're not prejudging Visa. You're just saying there's something there.
Well, I'm trying to be accurate in that.
That's all I'm saying, too. When I brought the story to your attention, we looked at it first. I went, yeah, it's not an admission of guilt. It's just like, hey, there's something here that
it's worth looking
is in
into
public interest.
That Visa might have known. That's what this means, is that there is a probable case, which is why the judge let it go forward, that somebody at Visa might have known that there were underage videos on some of these sites. Now, I didn't know the major porn sites were distributing underage videos. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be surprised, but, I mean, it's interesting that that's how you're finding out about it, is through a lawsuit against Visa.
Wasn't initially brought up to their attention by the lawsuit. Okay, the reason they're targeting Pornhub specifically is for a long time, it was it touted itself as the YouTube of porn sites. Anyone could create an account and upload a video.
That's right. You were sending us links to gun videos on there, and I was like, what the fuck? Oh, shit, that's because YouTube was banning gun videos.
Dude, I was watching Formula One races on Pornhub because it's the only place.
Yeah, so people created channels, and it wasn't always porn, but it was literally the way you originally set up a YouTube channel. There was no verification of who you were. You didn't have to be a business. Anyone could create an account. And they marketed themselves as the YouTube of porn. Now, they were assuming that, and you can question how right this assumption should be, that the individuals would be following the laws in their countries. So, they were just saying, we're a provider of a service, we're not a publisher. They're literally playing the whole YouTube game. So go after the individuals creating the content, we're just hosting.
Yeah, so if somebody uploads, you know, underage actors or whatever, there's no good way to say it, so...
Child porn. Yeah, just child porn.
I'm trying to find a way to say it that doesn't make me want to vomit, but it just doesn't exist.
After this actually hit the news a long time before this lawsuit. And Visa, for a while, stopped doing business with Pornhub because they didn't want to be associated with child porn. Now, supposedly, Pornhub straightened up their act, and then Visa, after everyone forgot what happened and what Pornhub was accused of, started processing payments for them again. And that's where the plaintiffs are giving the argument of they should have known because this had already hit the news once and they'd already been accused of this. Now, Visa's counter-argument is they're a legitimate company. If they were, you know, dealing child porn, the cops would deal with it. You don't go after us. We just process payments for every recognized company.
Yeah,
we're a utility, not a police department.
So in the ruling, Carney held that the plaintiffs adequately alleged that Visa engaged in criminal conspiracy with MindGeek to monetize child pornography. Specifically, he wrote, Visa knew that MindGeek's websites were teeming with monetized child porn, unquote, and that there was, quote, a criminal agreement to financially benefit from child porn that can be inferred from Visa's decision to continue to recognize MindGeek as a merchant, despite allegedly knowing that MindGeek monetized a substantial amount of child porn, unquote, and that, quote, the court can comfortably infer that Visa intended to help MindGeek monetize child porn, unquote, by, quote, knowingly providing the tool used to provide to complete the crime, unquote. Blech. Gross. Quote, when MindGeek decides to monetize child porn and Visa... I'm tired of reading this! And Visa decides to continue to allow its payments to the network, it can be used for that goal despite knowledge of MindGeek's monetization of gross stuff. It is entirely foreseeable that victims of this, like the plaintiff, will suffer from the harms that the plaintiff alleged, unquote, Carney wrote. In a statement, a Visa spokesperson said Visa condemns sex trafficking, sexual exploitation, and child sexual abuse materials as repugnant to our values and purposes of company. This pretrial ruling is disappointing and mischaracterizes Visa's role in its policies and practices. Visa will not tolerate the use of our network for illegal activity. We continue to believe that Visa is an improper defendant in this case, unquote. A rep from MindGeek provided this statement, quote, at this point in the case, the court has not yet ruled on the veracity of the allegations, and it is required to assume that all of the plaintiff's allegations are true and accurate. When the court can actually consider the facts, we are confident that the plaintiff's claims will be dismissed for lack of merit. MindGeek has zero tolerance for the posting of illegal contents on its platform and has instituted the most comprehensive safeguards in user-generated platform history, unquote. And there is truth in that. The way the legal system works, when you're doing initial allegations, you are taking them all as given. You're not evaluating evidence or likelihood or anything like that. But it does mean that there was enough of a good argument there that the judge is like, no, there's enough here. You guys don't get to dismiss this. So, you know, that means that there's a likelihood that it could not go Visa's way. the company statement continued, we have banned uploads from anyone who has not submitted government-issued ID that passes third-party verification, eliminated the ability to download free content, integrated several leading technological platform and content moderation tools, instituted digital fingerprinting of all videos found to be in violation of our non-consensual content and child sexual abuse material policies to help protect against removed videos being reposted, expanded our moderated workforce and processes, and partnered with dozens of nonprofit organizations around the world. Any insemination that MindGeek does not take the elimination of legal material seriously is categorically false, unquote. In June, MindGeek CEO Ferris Antoun and COO David Taslio resigned. The Montreal, Quebec-based company also laid off an unknown number of employees. This came in the wake of a June 20th New Yorker expose that found Pornhub hosted sexually explicit non-consensual videos, including of those with children. I really don't want to read any more of this just because I'm
reading. I think you've read it enough, to be honest.
Yeah, I'd like to stop.
Yeah.
Can we stop?
Yeah. Can we stop? Yeah, we can stop the reading of it. We've got enough to discuss with just already out there. And it's not just the horrible that you were talking about. They're also claiming revenge porn. If anyone doesn't know what that is, that's whenever the participants are willing and of legal age, but it's not supposed to be publicly disseminated. It's for private use only. And then
usual the case of an ex-lover posting them, and yeah,
which is what brought this case to the attention. This is also a revenge porn case.
Well, obviously, anybody who is involved with this should be, disemboweled with something blunt.
But the good part is you'll never find where the money went. Because their headquarters is in Luxembourg. From what I understand, Luxembourg's banking regulations are pretty hard to get at. Also, they do have an extradition treaty to America, but it's never been used.
Well, tracking the money, at least for this story, isn't as much of the interesting part is, depending on how this case is decided, it's precedent that you don't have to actually participate in the illegal activity. But let's say with this website, if you are a cable provider and you don't block certain websites, you're now liable. You're distributing their content.
That's me not disagreeing with you, dude. Buck pornography, literally.
Cute.
Well, this has ramifications beyond just child porn. If you have a site that illegally streams, let's say, sports games, now every internet provider that doesn't block that,
shut up, madman.
They're now liable under this legal argument.
Are they wrong? Because in this case, it's not. Because the ISP isn't directly hosting the content. The ISP is acting as a common carrier. This is specifically targeting the host. This would be saying YouTube is responsible for somebody uploading footage of the Olympics, trying to pick something that would, be big in court, but that's not nearly as gross.
It's not the host they're targeting. This is targeting Visa on the argument. So if I'm on Comcast is profiting from me illegally streaming something. If I'm illegally streaming something, I'm paying them for the ability to stream things.
But they're not. But Comcast is probably not the payment processor. They're probably still going back to, Visa or somebody.
Yeah,
so really, this
profiting,
is just
an, I'm this giving is just them money.
This is just an excuse to extract money from Visa, is what this is.
Yeah. But they're arguing that Visa profited from it. That's how they're criminally liable. Pornhub paid Visa to process payments. I pay Comcast to let me stream stuff. So though they're now liable if I'm illegally streaming the Olympics under this train of legal thought.
Well, they're suing them both. So
yeah, they're suing them both. So they could sue Comcast and whoever posted the illegal stream of the Olympics.
Yeah, but Comcast can say, look, I don't have any kind of agreement with that website. I have no ability to do anything about it. They're a common carrier, or I'm just common carrier. Whereas Visa actually would have had a contract with MindGeek to be their payment processor.
Yeah.
Now, if you sue, now taking that example, Madman, let's go with this. You know, they're streaming sports games. Fine. They couldn't. I don't think going after the ISP would work, but they could sue the streaming site and let's say Google for the Google ads all over the streaming site. Because they would have an agreement with Google as an advertiser. See, that's what's lacking with the ISP is there's no direct agreement with that website. But for whoever their ads provider is, and it's probably Google or Facebook, I guess. But it's like they own the majority of the advertising on the internet these days. So
I think it's 90% or something.
Yeah, so it's likely Google or Facebook. So you could sue Google and Facebook along with whatever random ass streaming site it is for copyright violation, saying, look, they're profiting from these ads and this ad company is profiting by being on this illegal website. And obviously you have an agreement with them since you're on the website. So you could take the legal theory in that direction. I don't know about going after the ISP just because there's no agreement with them between the two operations. You know what I mean?
Oh, but there's an agreement between me and the ISP. So I don't know if they'd sue me along, because I'm already entangled in this for being the person illegally streaming. But I kind of see your argument on it, too.
Well, but yeah. In this case, they don't say anything about the people who are downloading the horrible. So I don't know.
Oh, I'm going to watch the outcome of this case.
Yeah, I mean, we need to see what it is, because you're right in that it will set precedent for how some of this stuff is going to play out. And it could absolutely go the way you're saying, Madman. Yeah, I could see some lawyers getting interested in trying legal theories like that out. Again, without that contractual agreement between the two companies, I think you'll have a harder time with it. But
I guess the closer thing would be the whole rent that we always fell back on. Am I responsible for what my leasees do?
Well, then it's going to come down to specific laws in specific areas, isn't it?
Yeah. I think we just wait for some more information, but at least we know that court case is going ahead now. And gives us something to look at.
So next,
they really tried to bury that story, though.
Oh, of course they did.
That was...
Well, Visa doesn't want anybody else because you think MindGeek's the only controversial company that uses Visa?
No.
Yeah, I mean, they don't want that legal theory getting out there because, I mean, one, they'll get sued left, right, and center. But then, two, anybody who's doing anything that might be slightly controversial, no payment processor will want to work with them because, they'll get sued.
And it's not illegal controversial. They're already being payment processors are already getting crap for processing payments for sporting goods stores that sell guns.
Yeah, so same thing. Same theory. Now, of course, the out and out illegal stuff, they probably shouldn't be processing anyways. But I mean, if it could potentially require a level of vetting from Visa that would make a lot of small businesses not be able to afford their services. You could argue as to whether or not that's a good thing. I'd personally love to see a lot more payment processors than just, the handful that we have today. But
I would too. Well, yeah, maybe some competition.
Making the payment processing more expensive isn't going to spur competition in it, though, because Visa's already established if anyone's going to be able to afford extra regulation, it's going to be them.
Yeah, it's going to be Visa and the other card
they
processors.
Will want it.
But I was just thinking in terms of if they're refusing to do business, maybe you'll see other people spring up who would do business with the more controversial stuff, but they're risking lawsuits, so who knows? Next article up is from Engadget. Meta will no longer pay U.S. publishers for news content. After Meta's revenue, for anybody who's not keeping track, that's Facebook. After their revenue shrank for the first time in history, the company has reportedly told publishers it will no longer pay for content to run in Facebook's news tab, according to Axios. Quote, most people do not come to Facebook for news, and as a business, it doesn't make sense to overinvest in areas that don't align with user preferences, unquote, a spokesperson said in a statement. Facebook spent around $105 million on such deals, paying $20 million to the New York Times, $10 million to the Wall Street Journal, and $3 million to CNN, according to Axios. Facebook struck the deals back in 2019 as it boosted its investment in news and even hired journalists to direct traffic to the news tab. Facebook also promised to pay partner sites, including The Guardian and The Economist, for news in the UK when it launched the news tab there in late 2020. Shortly after that, it signed a deal with Rupert Murdoch's News Corp to pay for content in Australia after the Australian Parliament passed a law requiring Facebook and Google to do so. Along with Google, Facebook has taken criticism for drawing ad dollars away from dedicated news sites that has contributed to the failure of a quarter of U.S. news sites over the past 15 years, according to Pointer. With the professional journalism vacuum being filled by false or misleading news on Facebook. So, yeah, I kind of agree. I don't think most people are going to Facebook to get their news.
I wonder if do the publishers have a right to just say you can't link to our sites now?
You've always had that right.
I guess they just have to go after Facebook for linking.
Yeah, it's difficult to enforce. I mean, what are you going to do, block anybody who has a referral from Facebook's servers? I mean,
Well, they did that with the Washington Post.
Yeah, they did. You're right.
The Hunter laptop.
So it doesn't do any good.
I mean, it's been done before.
Yeah, it doesn't do much good if you use like a URL shortener or something else to, you know, bounce through to kind of mask the source. But
I can solve problems that they haven't figured out yet.
You really think they haven't figured out how to use a URL shortener?
I think he's talking about the casual user, not people from Facebook.
Yeah, I just don't make it popular. Because you know, once it's popular, that's when they go ahead and change it.
Okay.
I can see the publisher's point of view on this is we're not getting the ad revenue from them going to our site because they're on your site, and we still need to pay our reporters, crappy as though they may be, so that they continue reporting.
Well, I don't think the problem was linking, though, because if you click a link, you're opening up their page, so you're loading their ads, you're doing, you know, getting the full site, right? I think the problem was that people were caught, you know, Facebook was taking the news stories as a feed.
Yeah, they had their own news feed.
Yeah, so you weren't ever actually going out to CNN or the New York Times or Fox News or Wall Street Journal. You were getting all of it through Facebook. It was just the text was being copied and pasted into Facebook proper. It'd be like if I took the text out of the articles we read and posted that in the show notes or on the G15 site, which I don't do. I put the links to the stories. Then the downside of that is if a news site reorganizes their link and you want to go back and see something I was talking about, you know, 6 months, a year ago, the story might have moved, it might not be published anymore, or they might have changed it since we read it. And I know I don't always read the full content of the stories, but they do go back and change them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they don't always announce when they do that.
No, that's where archive.org is a fantastic.
Yep.
Because that'll show you where things have been changed. Assuming that archive.org scraped it before it, you know, was edited. Because they have gotten
pretty good about
that.
Things, man. Yeah. Pretty good, like archive.org. I can't complain. They've been lifesavers for a few things.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not
memory hold.
I'm not lambasting archive.org. I'm just acknowledging that there are limits.
Yeah,
yeah. No, if they don't know to archive it, or haven't gotten to it yet before the change happens.
Right.
Not their fault.
So let's just continue the trend of companies being terrible. Tim Hortons tells you exactly what they think your privacy is worth here on this one. It's from Vice, or, well, Motherboard. But
they're a Canadian company, aren't they?
Yeah, yes, yeah. They are.
Canadian donuts.
Canadian coffee giant Tim Hortons is proposing offering impacted customers a free hot drink and a baked good as a settlement in class action lawsuits filed after the company spied on app users for over a year. The news provides a conclusion to one of the most bizarre location data gathering scandals in recent years. Quote, "We're pleased to have reached a proposed settlement subject to court approval in the four class action lawsuits in Quebec, British Columbia, and Ontario involving the Tim Hortons app. As part of the proposed settlement, eligible app users will receive a free hot beverage and a free baked good." Unquote. Tim Hortons told Motherboard in an email, quote, "All parties agree this is a fair settlement, and we look forward to the Superior Court of Quebec's decision on the proposal. We are confident that pending the Quebec court's approval on the settlement, the courts in BC and Ontario will recognize the settlement." Unquote. So Tim Hortons thinks a year's worth of your location data is worth a coffee and a donut.
Fuck Tim Hortons.
Yeah, wait, give me my cash, motherfucker.
Yeah, I'd like to get the money you earned with my location data. Thank you very much.
Yeah, and yeah, more than what, fucking $8 worth of shit.
The sad part is that it's $8 worth of shit, because my first thought reading that was that it was like $5 worth of shit, and then I'm like, oh no, prices went nuts.
Yeah. Adjusted for Biden bucks, you know.
And even the $5, I'm thinking, I can get a donut from my favorite bakery for $1.39, and a cup of coffee shouldn't cost more than 75 fucking cents. It's coffee.
Way to go, Joe. Way to go. Horton sold Motherboard in an email. Oh, I already read that. An email sent to affected users and tweeted by James McLeod on Friday reads, quote, "You are receiving this email in connection with proposed settlement, subject to court approval, of a national class action lawsuit involving the Tim Hortons app and the collection of geolocation data between April the 1st, 2019 and September 30th, 2020. Unquote. Quote, "As part of the proposed settlement agreement, eligible app users will receive a free hot beverage and a free baked good. Distribution details will be provided following approval in the event the court approves the settlement." Unquote, the email continues. The email specifies that the one free hot beverage has a retail value of $6.19 Canadian. Holy shit!
Is that coffee and a blowjob?
I know Canadian dollars are usually a little less than... What is that? Yeah, CAD to U.S. dollars. How much is that? $4.81. That's still a five... okay, so I guess it's an espresso drink, if you're going with Starbucks pricing. And the free baked good has a retail value of $2.39 Canadian, largely leaving the Tim Hortons menu wide open for impacted users to choose from and load up on all the extras. Wow. As the email that leads to the Tim Hortons app tracked every time a user entered or left a Tim Hortons competitor, major sports venue, or their home or workplace. In June, Canadian regulators said Tim Hortons data collection violated Canadian law. Quote, "Tim Hortons clearly crossed the line by amassing a huge amount of highly sensitive information about its customers. Following people's movements every few minutes of every day was clearly an inappropriate form of surveillance. In this case, once again, highlights the harms that can result from poorly designed technologies, as well as the need for strong privacy laws to protect the rights of Canadians, because your privacy is worth a coffee and a donut."
Now, I'm not saying going into a Tim Hortons and taking the float out of the top tank of the toilet, then taking the handle off the off. And I'm not saying to do that, but I mean, if you're angry, you're angry.
It's not where I thought you were going with it, but that's still
it's
hilarious.
It's only a split pin, dude. Just take some needle nose pliers. It's 2 seconds in and out.
And it's not like it's your water building.
Exactly.
Fuck up.
Well, honestly, are you? I thought you were about to explain how to leave an upper decker, but...
No. I'm not malicious or anything. It's only my data you fucking stole. But what did you Tim Horton users fucking learn? Don't
nothing.
Download apps, right?
They
you are
nothing.
The product. If you were Tim Horton's lawyer, I just want to say, Your Honor, what do these people expect? You know, it's not my fault that half our customers are intellectually bankrupt. Dude, you're downloading a coffee app. Of course you're going to get fucking tracked. You have the McDonald's app on, you're getting tracked.
I just want to hear a lawyer make that argument in court. Your Honor, in our defense, have you seen our customers?
There's a reason I didn't pass the bar.
So far, you've done better than Colonel Sanders. He assaulted one of his clients. That's why he makes chicken and not, you know, still a lawyer.
In his defense, dude, he made out like a bandit.
Didn't he haunt like half of Japan, too?
Oh, no, but this one baseball team he fucking cursed. It's amazing.
Oh, Sanders has a great fucking backstory, dude. Like, do you know how many times that guy nearly went bankrupt?
Several times.
He is the can-do spirit, man, of entrepreneurism.
I think he also got into a hell of a lot of fist fights.
Yeah, yeah. I need to go rewatch
that. I think it was a biopic I watched on him a while back. It's interesting.
I'd like to see, you know, say Elon Musk go and clock fucking Bill Gates in the eye for shorting Tesla stock. You know, it's got to be a pain in the ass.
Well, I mean, that'd just be fun to watch.
I know.
We're just going to take two random billionaires and put them in the octagon and see what happens.
Hey, if you can get two has-been fucking actors to slap each other on national television, well, you can do anything these days.
We're recreating Celebrity Deathmatch, but it's not claymation.
And you're not seeing me not argue against it.
And here's going to be my classic way of fixing this problem from now until it happens. We need a law stating individuals own their data. I know a lot of people will just click yes to the box because that's all it's going to add to all of these programs. But it's at least something.
It's also hard as hell to enforce.
I mean, even if you could monetize your own data. Yes, track me, but pay fucking, you know, 25 cents an hour or something.
Well, someplace, you know, like a lot of back words. How do they work? Several cell phone companies started out trying to do that. Oh, we'll give you $5 off your bill if you let us track you. So, you know, they were directly monetizing it, but then when not enough people did it, they started just trying to do it to everybody anyways. So I have to check the damn Verizon app once every couple of months and make sure they haven't turned it on. And every time Windows Update runs, I have to go back in to shut up 10 and turn the telemetry off. And it's not that I think Microsoft is directly spying on what I do with the computer. I know what they're doing with the telemetry. It's mostly they're collecting crash logs and usage statistics so that they can use that to see what they need to fix next. I get it. It's, you know, it's not as evil. But if you turn on the Windows Ink and Typing thing or Cortana, it sends everything you fucking type to a Microsoft database. Do I think Microsoft is doing anything shady with it? No, probably not. They don't want to get sued out of tracking everybody's shit. But what happens if they get hacked or do something stupid or publish it in an unprotected, you know, Azure bucket or whatever they call their equivalent of S3 because I can't think of it at the moment. I mean, you know, there's just no need for that shit. And you know, I rarely install apps on my phone anymore for this kind of reason. It's like, does your website not work? Okay. That's the thing that drives me the most nuts trying to use an iPad you go to a website, you know, it comes up with a big thing. Oh, it's better. Use our app. Don't use the website. And you have to find the little hidden X or the fuck off button to make it go, fuck, I hate that shit. But you know, half the people just install the app because it's easy. You know, they go, well, that's easier than dealing with the website because every time you go to the website, what's it do? It tells you to install the fucking app.
Nope.
And as far as monetizing, a lot of the apps are doing the whole earn points when you spend through the app so you eventually get something free. I went to a Dairy Queen for lunch today. And going through the drive-thru, there are signs for you to order on their fucking app. I'm like, I don't need the app. I'm at your location. I'm going through the fucking drive-thru. Give me a cheeseburger. But on the advertisement, it's earn free crap with so many purchases on our app.
Whatever happened to the loyalty card where you get to, they used to punch it and you could take it home and punch it with your own hole punch? And I mean, not that I would ever do such a thing.
Not that anyone would ever do that. Like,
that was the Subway thing, and they usually did stamps. It's just our Subway always ran out of stamps and thought I was a Satan worshiper.
Wait.
I love them.
You're not?
Oh, I'm going to continue letting them think that because they kept giving me a discount every time I ordered a sandwich that was $6.66.
I mean, you're Catholic, so I kind of assumed.
I'm a papist, not a Satan worshiper. That just means I'm only sometimes worshiping Satan.
I was going to say, there's no difference these days,
man. It's just a middleman involved. God.
Yeah. The Pope's just the middle management.
I'm sorry. I just couldn't help that joke. That was like,
oh no, it's all there.
It's like the one I pulled on Static the other day. It was just there. It was too easy. It was too good. So,
hey, sometimes you got to grab the low hanging fruit.
Oh yeah, especially whenever you're fat, you can't really jump that high.
It's true. So, next one up is from Yahoo Finance. BlackRock teams up with Coinbase in crypto market expansion. I mean, I'll take things that'll end well for 1,000 Bob.
I mean, new flavors of evil Satan here.
Well, we were just talking about it. So. BlackRock is partnering with Coinbase Global Inc. to make it easier for for institutional investors to manage and trade Bitcoin, taking the world's largest asset manager into a cryptocurrency market hammered by plunging prices and government investigations. Coinbase surged 15% to 92.61 at 1:20 p.m. in New York. The partnership with BlackRock provided some relief for the U.S. For the biggest U.S. crypto trading platform, whose stock has lost more than 2/3 of its value this year through Wednesday. Okay, let's call this what it is. What this really is: BlackRock just took over Coinbase.
Yeah, they don't share anything, dude.
Yeah, it's they. You know, what did they call this? As partnering with? Yeah, that's they just handled Coinbase's debt, got them some help for the government peering over their books, and said, "You now work for us."
Yeah, I'm surprised Citadel didn't fucking grab it. That's another one no one talks about. Yeah. Citadel, they're just as big as BlackRock, but they're not as well known.
Top BlackRock clients will be able to use its Aladdin investment management system to oversee their exposure to Bitcoin, along with other portfolio assets such as stock and bonds, and to facilitate financing and trading on Coinbase's exchange, according to a statement Thursday. The focus of the partnership with Coinbase, the biggest U.S. crypto trading platform, quote, will initially be on Bitcoin, unquote, BlackRock said. BlackRock's moves deepens the involvement of Wall Street, traditional financial players in crypto and related technologies, even after this year's meltdown in such assets. Bitcoin lost about half of its value in 2022, while the collapse of the Terra ecosystem and hedge fund Three Arrows Capital have raised questions about the resilience of the market and prompted increased regulatory scrutiny. So the story keeps going on. Coinbase is facing a probe by U.S. Securities Commission, but, I mean, that's the gist of it, is that BlackRock is quote-unquote partnering with Coinbase. And I think we all know what that means.
It means now they're the leading crypto manager.
They already were. Oh, BlackRock, you mean?
Yeah, BlackRock, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, okay. So,
and it could be a good investment for BlackRock.
Oh, I'm sure it is, because Bitcoin's on a dip. So if you're going to buy Bitcoin, it's a good time to do it. And so they didn't buy Bitcoin. They bought the Bitcoin company. So, because Coinbase was the one everyone used. Although, I do have to wonder, a lot of the ransomware I saw, especially when I was a little bit more active in the ransomware investigations, which admittedly, my present role at work, I am nearly as involved in the on-the-ground security work. I will admit that. So if I seem out of touch on something, it's because it's been a couple of years since I've actually been in the trenches on it. Almost every one of the ransomware guides on how to pay their ransom in Bitcoin told you to go download Coinbase and get your Bitcoin through Coinbase. So I'm wondering if that's why they got so big.
It probably didn't hurt. I mean, whenever the mafia is saying bribe us with this company, it is technically helping that company.
More and more RU's idea of just not carrying a smartphone is probably the way to go.
Or at least take some time off it. At least one day a week. Leave it at home.
I'm just thinking, get yourself an old laptop, right? You know, something running Windows 98. Carry that around instead of the, you know, flipping smartphone or tablet. Because then you don't have to worry about it doing all the spying because they hadn't thought of it yet and the computer didn't have the horsepower to do it. And get you a laptop, Pentium 1, running DOS.
Dumb flip phone and just use the computer at your house.
Oh, that's certainly a way to go. Oh, actually, though, you got to be careful with the dumb flip phones. Like the original Razors go for a lot of money on eBay. Let's see, what did they go for? I guess that's changed. Yeah, original Moto Razor 3 is $18, $16. Oh, these all say for parts. I thought they had one that, vintage cell phone. I wanted unlocked. $800, for fuck's sake. Yeah. Yeah, that's more what I thought it was. So, anyways, though, next article. And I have been using the Amp player that was recommended to us a couple of weeks ago, and I do like it. I've loaded a Winamp skin onto it. I do like it. But this one is from InputMag.com. If you had any doubts that 90s nostalgia is alive and thriving, we have an important update. Winamp is back. The iconic media player's reboot is now official with its latest version, which is the culmination of a 4-year beta. The latest version is updated for the modern era, but it's a fairly new release, so it still has some kinks to work out. Still, the developers preserve the classic skin and intro audio clip that instantly transport you to the days of unfettered music piracy. Luckily, the reboot stays fairly true to the original Winamp vibe from the late 90s. The original skins, like Winamp Classic, Modern, Bento, and Big Bento, are still around, and you can easily import old skins. To get Winamp updated, developers say most of the work was dedicated to upgrading the back-end coding of the audio player. Quote, to the end user, it might not seem like there's been a whole heap of changes, but the largest and hardest part was actually migrating the entire project from Visual Studio 2008 to Visual Studio 2019 and getting it all to build successfully, the post reads. There's no complaints here since I don't think people were looking for too many changes. Unfortunately, this update does mean that you need at least Windows 7 to run the new Winamp. Still a bunch of bugs and issues to work out. You can see from the known issues section of the post and the 4 pages of comments. The devs also mentioned that this build and its features still need testing. So they're rebasing Winamp, basically. And, I don't think that's a bad thing. I kind of like seeing some of this more utilitarian software still floating around. I don't like that they're having, that in updating it, it's getting heavier because...
Yeah, that's...
Well, I tell you, I had a recent experience. I think we talked about it on the last show that I was helping my dad with a new computer, right? Well, he had a bunch of software he had bought for his previous computer, and he'd had that computer for like 12 years. So we were loading Office 2003, a video editor that he had bought ages ago. And, of course, all this stuff we're putting on a brand new machine. So, I mean, it's fast, right? Because you're running 10-year-old software on a modern computer. And, most of it was working with Windows 11. We only really ran into a couple of things that didn't work and we had to go find the modern version of. But, his Office programs were just loading, like nothing. Right? Because, of course, it's running a 10-year-old version of Office. But he was like, I bought it. I'm going to use it. I'm like, I can appreciate that. So, you know, I kind of like this idea of taking some modern hardware and loading the old software on it, especially because the old software doesn't have telemetry. The old software doesn't require an always-on internet connection. The old software doesn't, you know, check your files to make sure they're not pirated or whatever the hell RealPlayer was doing a few years back. Or like what Apple does, where they delete your local files and say, oh, you can play your music from Apple Cloud or whatever they call it. Where, you know, because we talked about that a couple of years ago, where they were like deleting your music collection off your hard drive and letting you stream it from the internet. And it's like, on one hand, I get that. I see how, you know, it lets you sell a smaller hard drive and sell off all of your music. But on the other hand, the fuck? It's like, you don't delete files off my computer.
And on some of these things, I wonder what new features are there in Word? I haven't actually used it in a while, but
updating updated linkage to Office 365, updated integration with OneDrive, probably some back end changes on the macros and shit like that, and security patches. But if you're running a version of Word that's 10 years old, I'd bet almost none of the macro viruses are even going to work on the damn thing.
All right. The virus protection. I was just thinking, formatting for... I've already forgotten the different formats I had to use for college papers. Like, they haven't changed.
Doc or DocX, but even then, the old version, a lot of the older stuff will still work with DocX. Because that's been around for a while now. So, actually, I've gotten a lot of my family to switch over to LibreOffice on their machines.
Oh, I'll use it just because it's free.
That's the other reason I've gotten them to switch over. But Dad's like, nope, I bought this version of Office. I'm going to run it. I'm like, well, I can appreciate that. So we got it to work. Took a little bit of doing, but it works.
Yeah, and if you're already used to using it, and it does what you want it to do,
dude.
I'm the guy that does not change.
My grandmother has a computer that she's always asking me to look at. I am terrified to touch that thing because anytime you change anything, oh, I wasn't like this. Oh, that's not how I want it. I can't, you know, she can't handle change. And this thing is a mess because she got some local shop to put the classic start menu on a Windows 8 machine. And changed a bunch of set. Of course, you can't run updates because that turns off. It breaks all that stuff. And it's just, I'm afraid to touch the thing. Yet she insists on using it. It's like, just go. Just no. But you know, I don't even want to think about her getting a Windows 11 machine. It's like, good God.
Oh, and one problem with modern software when you said Windows 11. It's not just that they keep moving shit around. Is if you wake up one morning and you're supposed to have Windows 10 and you walk over to your computer, good news, we upgraded for you. I'm like, fuck you. I didn't click OK to that shit.
Did you get that?
No, but I was helping an individual out earlier today who had that happen to him.
Yeah.
I've got an update sitting here going, your computer is not compliant for Windows 11. Fuck you.
Oh, mine tried. I went in and turned a bunch of stuff off, but it was trying to schedule the Windows 11 install for me, and I stopped it because I'm like, I just don't want to deal with this. I will eventually roll to Windows 11 on my Windows machines, but I'm really hoping to not be on Windows for the majority of my work in the next year or so. But or at least outside of work machines, I guess I should say. But we'll see. That's just really hoping to see Proton and things like the Steam Deck kind of push that up. I did have a story, but I ended up dropping it from the lineup for this next one because I thought it was better. That Steam's stats are showing way more Linux users, and they're pretty sure it's all just the Steam Deck. But again, those kind of stats are things like game programmers look at and game companies look at. So maybe not programming for Windows directly, but at least not actively breaking compatibility through things like Proton and Wine. Like, I'll take it if I can run it on Wine and Proton, right? That's okay. Sure, it's not quite pure to the open source ethos, but I mean, as much as I would love to be, you know, I got to give up for practicality on that one. I would love to be an open source zealot. I just can't do it. So I prefer open source. Don't get me wrong, but anyways, last story. Let's do the last story here. It's from the BBC and is fucking hilarious. Did I already post the link? I did. Cool. Almost 10 years ago, James Howells threw away a hard drive during a clear out, forgetting about the Bitcoin on it. Now, with the Bitcoin worth an estimated 150 million pounds, or $184 million, he's planning to spend millions digging up a Newport landfill in a bid to find the lost hard drive. If recovered, Mr. Howells said he would give 10% of the proceeds to turn the city into a cryptocurrency hub. But the council said excavating the site would pose an ecological risk. But Mr. Howells, an IT engineer, accidentally threw away the hard drive in 2013 after mining 80,000 bitcoins in the early stages of the currency's development. Bitcoin fluctuates wildly in value. In January 2021, Mr. Howells was worth around 210 million pounds, but a big crash coming earlier this year now is worth significantly less. Newport Council, which owns the site landfill Mr. Howells believes the drive is in, has repeatedly denied him access to dig the site on the grounds of environmental access and concerns. Mr. Howells has now pledged about 10% of the proceeds of the drive, should it be recovered, to a range of crypto-based projects. Any project to dig for the drive would require a huge manual task of digging through thousands of tons of compacted landfill that has been accumulated at the site for decades. But Mr. Howell believes he now has the funding and expertise to set up to do it in an effective and environmentally beneficial way for the site. Quote, digging up a landfill is a huge operation in itself, he said. The funding has been secured. We brought on an AI specialist. Their technology can easily be retrained to search for a hard drive. We've also got an environmental team on board. We basically got a well-rounded team of various experts with various expertise, which, when all come together, are capable of completing this task to a very high standard, unquote. Finding the hard drive, though, is just part of the monumental task. There's no guarantee that if even it's there, it's in a recoverable state. But
I was going to say the disk fucking...
Yeah, what if it's rusted?
By now? I know.
But if it is, then its owner is set for a mega money windfall, although the actual amount will depend on which direction the volatile cryptocurrency goes in. Either way, it's likely to be many millions of pounds, but the 37-year-old, who has signed away some of the ownership of the coins as part of the funding process, has said his donation to the city would be used to promote the use and understanding of cryptocurrency. We've got a whole list of incentives of good cases we'd like to do for the community, he added. Quote, one of the things we'd like to do is on the actual landfill site, once we've cleaned it up and recovered that land, is to put up a power generation facility, maybe a couple of wind turbines. We'd like to set up a community-owned Bitcoin mining facility, which is using that clean electricity to create Bitcoin for the people of Newport, unquote. Among his other plans are proposals to give $50 worth of Bitcoin to every person in the city and install crypto-based terminals in all shops. I think he's going to spend through all of the money from this hard drive before he ever gets it back.
I don't think he's ever going to see it.
No. Newport Council said it has repeatedly responded to Mr. Howell's request for access to the site. Quote, we have statutory duties which we must carry out in managing the landfill site, a spokesperson said. Part of this is managing the ecological risk to the site and the wilder area. Mr. Howell's proposals pose significant ecological risk which we cannot accept, unquote. And indeed are prevented from considering by the terms of our permit, unquote. So, basically they're saying you can't go in there for ecological reasons, which makes me wonder, what the fuck did they bury? It's just trash.
Everything, yeah. Dude, there's so much methane comes out of those trash piles.
Yeah.
Again, I just like to take this moment to thank Joe Biden for putting wind turbines in war memorials. Big piece of shit, Joe. Yeah, they put fucking wind turbines in war memorials now. That's not just desecration. Sorry.
I did not hear that until just now. I'll have to look into that. But on the story, one if One problem that it sounds like the town isn't actually allowed to do the approval. They had to permit their landfill. I wonder who's issuing the permit and who you'd have to talk to.
Well, it sounds like they're not telling him either.
Is it the province?
Dude, they just come up with some sort of bullshit fucking environmental law.
Well, it honestly, I wonder if it's some people in the town. So it's just like, this sounds like a lot of work to figure out. We're just going to say no.
Yeah. If you're doing a landfill cleanup, it's also an option for a redesign. Because as RU did say, there's lots of methane in those piles of trash. Some modern landfills actually capture that and convert it to electricity.
Yeah.
While doing the cleanup, this pile of trash is now being sorted, pull up any useful metals that got thrown away, and I know everyone takes their batteries to Batteries Plus and drops them in those little containers to be properly disposed of. But now back in the real world where those double A's just get tossed into the trash bag, you can pick up all kinds of batteries that shouldn't be there and are seeping acid and heavy metals into the soil.
You're a monster, madman. You put batteries in the bin?
I would never do that.
Return them to the ocean where they came from.
I take them to Batteries Plus to be properly recycled.
Lithium ions, I take them to their proper, just more. That's more a safety thing than anything. Cause it's like
I return them to the sea, Morps. Once a month, I take my dead batteries down to this ocean and release them.
I'm not near enough to the ocean to do that. I have to use the Ohio River, and frankly, I don't think it would notice.
It all flows, man. It all flows.
It'll make it to the ocean eventually.
I don't think the Ohio River would notice, the truth be told.
I mean, the AAA spawning season is amazing, watching those little AAAs jump up the fucking weirs.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
But it's an option to clean up and modernize the landfill.
Well, there's also a question, too. If they capped the landfill, what did they build on top of it? And is he going to have to bulldoze it?
Generally, after about 25, 30 years, they turn them into sports ovals.
Yeah, so
in this country, anyway.
They've built neighborhoods over them here. So
you can't really, because they're always compacting.
That doesn't mean that the neighborhood stayed there, are you?
Oh, okay.
We only hear about the ones that make the news.
Yeah, because I know we figured out that you shouldn't really build on abandoned coal mines.
It's like, what? The ground's full of holes. Gee, it's like, why do the children keep disappearing? We don't know. Or better yet, somebody lights a fire down there.
Oh, we have the Never Forget Coal Fire already. You can't start your own.
My old place right down the back in the left corner had an air vent going down, I think it was 200 feet. It was just wide enough for a child to fall through. And after a big heavy rain, you could hear the water rushing down through it.
Dude,
it was nuts.
You missed the opportunity to build your own bat cave.
No, dude, I just started throwing my green waste down the hole. It was my own personal fucking dumping ground. Motor oil, fucking car parts, spark plugs. It's not my problem. It's 200 fucking feet straight down.
I want to drop a lit mortar down there now.
No, madman, because it was part of the coal
full of gas.
Is still burning. It caught fire back in the 60s. But some of it still burns.
Jeez. All right, let's... Bat, you know what the downside of using a Bluetooth mouse is? The thing goes to sleep on you. I mean, that's great for saving the battery, but it kind of sucks when you're ready and you hit the Digital Dojo thing and you have to wake the mouse up. So for tonight, what I have for you for Digital Dojo is actually really cool. I've listened to about half of it so far, and it's fascinating. It's an interview this YouTube channel Lex Friedman did with John Carmack, and it's 5 hours long.
Is this your first finding out about Lex?
Yeah.
I've been listening to Lex for the last couple of years. Fucking fascinating guy, isn't he?
Well, I mean, he's kind of all over the place. I feel like he's trying to... I feel like he's trying to do the same interview style Rogan does.
I would say he's Joe Rogan with autism.
Okay, yeah, that's fair. I was going to say he's just not as good at it.
No, I think he's good.
He's
when
good.
When I first started watching him, I was like, wow, dude, you're really trying to do Joe Rogan, but you're a little autistic for it. It grows on you after a while, and you figure out it just becomes his style. He hasn't actually stylized himself off Joe Rogan. Because if you notice, there's no drinking, there's no smoking, and there's no fucking around on his podcast. Get in, talk, done.
But the other thing he does, and again, this is why I was comparing him to Rogan, he lets the guy talk.
Uh-huh.
And that's...
Oh, yeah.
And so, like I said, I've listened to a couple hours of this, and, you know, it's just John Carmack. I mean, Lex is blowing smoke up his ass for at least, you know, the first half hour about calling him the greatest programmer in the world and all this other stuff. But it is actually really fascinating listen to Carmack talk about programming, you know, coming up in the early PC era, switching over to Next Stations at Ed Software, you know, early stages of Doom, the dot plan file. And it's just fascinating listening to, because there's a lot of history in there, a lot of computer technology in there.
A lot of stuff you've forgotten about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I remember reading up on how to keep an id Software style plan file in the 90s, and it's one of those things I never did because, you know, I was in school at the time, and it was like, you know, seemed really cool, and you did it like twice and then didn't keep up with it. But, it's just fascinating to listen to, and it's great background while you're doing other things. And I definitely recommend this interview, at least from the couple hours I've heard of it so far. Like I said, it's 5 hours long, so I haven't gotten through all of it yet, but I'm sure I will. And so you're saying this Lex Fridman guy has some other good interviews too?
Oh yeah,
he interviews engineers a lot. He's was it MIT trained?
Yeah, he speaks a couple of languages.
Okay.
Born in Russia.
So
I think he's an American citizen now.
Yeah.
Dude, he talks to a lot of dudes that the guys wouldn't bother going on Joe Rogan.
Yeah, lots of hard science. Mm-hmm. He'll talk to philosophers. Anybody who's doing something interesting, he talks to.
So what I'm hearing is I've missed the boat on this guy because apparently he's worth listening to. Great.
Yeah, but again, you haven't missed the boat. You've just got a lot of back catalog you can catch up on now.
Cool. again, this interview with Carmack's really good. So I'm recommending that for Dojo.
Yeah.
And apparently this guy's back catalog is good too. So everybody else is recommending that for Dojo. So
well,
there you go.
And his back catalog, it's not all computers. There's some. I mean, he's, like I said, into hard sciences, so there's physics. There's he's talked to several people about the future of AI.
Dude, he does a lot of UFO stuff. Like, dudes who are actually... No, I've never really seen a UFO, but I've seen the guy with brain cancer who touched a UFO.
Oh, yeah, he also interviewed the pilot that shot the Tic Tac video.
Yeah, fighter pilot. Some great stuff, man.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, so you got a nice back catalog to sit there.
All right. Well, of course, that's all I got for tonight. Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday. The Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit. In the IRC tonight, CyberLard, Psychros, Madman, myself, and the Soylent Bomb. Madman, closing thoughts.
For some reason, it's got the Goodfellas linked to this guy, and I'm not sure why.
Oh, he has an interview with a dude who was a hitman from the mob.
Oh, the last not that Goodfellas, guy. But that would even be a better reason to have it linked there.
Yeah, dude, it was a great interview. It runs about 2.5 hours, and the dude is just, yeah, I killed a lot of people. I don't want to talk about that. You know, we all know that I was a hitman for the Guardies and play. But yeah, let's talk about life after it. You know, he wasn't dwelling on, everybody knows the gangster shit. It's like, what's your life being the last one left? You know, that's the only reason you're still alive is because you outlasted everyone.
Are you? Closing thoughts.
Got a movie recommendation that I haven't actually watched yet, but sort of did watch a little bit, but haven't watched it all yet. Flesh and Blood. 1980s something film recommended to me by another guy. I saw a little bit of, apparently it was rated X and banned in America on its release. Not because of the impact of violence and gore, it, cause there were too many titties in it.
That'll happen.
Director's version is available from what I understand and is worth the watch. The lead character in it, and one fucking names escape me. Dude was in Blade Runner, did that fantastic monologue as he pushed the nail through his hand. That guy, I forget what his name is. He's dead now.
Rooker Howard? Your,
I have no idea, Morse, but that's your terrible movie review for me.
Okay. All right.
Lots of blood, gore, and sex.
I already read the closing. I think I just play sound effects and stop recording, right?
Apparently.
Okay.
We're sorry. Your call cannot be completed as dialed.
And now I don't suffer because I got a bottle of 60 warm hugs from God.
Shut up, Wesley.